Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome and thank you for joining the Recordati preliminary full year 2019 results conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Maria Antaçke, investor relator of Recordati. Please go ahead, madam.
Hello, good afternoon or good morning to everyone, and thank you for attending the Recordati conference call. Andrea Recordati and Luigi Lacorte will be presenting and commenting upon our full year 2019 results, as well as our 2020 targets. Mr. Fritz Quindo is also with us here today. For a better understanding of his presentation, please access the set of slides available on our website, www.recordati.com, under the Investors section and Presentations tab. At the end of the presentation, there will be an questions and answer period for any questions you may have.
Okay.
Please go ahead, Andrea.
Thank you. Good afternoon or good morning, everybody connected. Thank you for joining this conference call. So I will get down to business. 2019 preliminary full year results. We believe we have delivered another year of very strong performance, with revenue growth of 9.6% and EBITDA growth of 9% to 544 million. As you will see more detail later on in the call, growth has been broad-based across our businesses in all key geographies, with organic growth of roughly 5.7%, mostly driven by volume, with 1.3% price uplift, meaning US, Turkey, and Russia, and a negligible year-on-year FX impact. Operating income grew by 5.2%, with a slight reduction in margin, driven by increasing amortization of intangible assets and additional investments made in Europe, where we established local organizations in the Nordics, Benelux, Baltics for our SPC business, and initial investments we have made to build our new endocrinology franchise. Net income is up 18.1% versus the previous year and reflects benefits from agreement reached with Italian tax authorities in late December on the patent box benefit for our IP in Italy, with a tax benefit of 27 million relating to years 2015 to 2018 and 8.3 million relating to 2019. If we exclude these benefits related to prior years, net income would have been 341.9 million, therefore 9.4% above last year and equaling 23.1% of sales. The business has continued to generate strong underlying cash flow, with net debt increased to 902.7 million from 588.4 million, reflecting dividends distributed for an amount of 190.9 million in payments for acquisition milestones and licenses for a total of around 425 million. Aside from this strong performance, we also further reinforce the group of two important business development transactions, being the acquisition from Agirion Pharmaceuticals Inc. of the exclusive commercialization rights of Juxtapid in Japan, and the important strategic transaction which we closed in Q4 with Novartis for the acquisition of Signifor, Signifor-LAR, and Isturisa from Novartis, which contributed already 10 million of net revenue in Q4 of last year. Before handing over to our new CFO, Luigi Lacorte, who will provide more details on our financial performance in 2019, let me provide you some more updates on the opportunity we have with the new endocrinology portfolio. So please, next slide, slide three. This acquisition from Novartis is one of the most important transactions for the group or that the group has made to date and will contribute decisively to us becoming an important player in the rare disease space worldwide. We're in the process of building an endocrinology hub in Basel to handle all regulatory, supply chain, medical affairs, and commercial aspects and manage commercial aspects of this new franchise on a global level. We're also setting up a specialized team in the U.S. With the objective of improving the performance of Signifor and ensuring a successful launch of Isturisa once it is approved. At the same time, we're also ramping up our organization in Europe and in the rest of the world in order to provide proper focus for our endocrinology franchise. All told, more than 70 people are being added to the Recordati Rare Disease Organization worldwide. Next slide, 4, please. In this slide, we focus on Signifor, a somatostatin analog for the treatment of Cushing disease and acromegaly, with potential peak sales of more than 100 million. Last year, as you can see in the slide, Signifor grew by 4% in almost all key markets. We are proceeding with the relaunch activities linked to Signifor LAR, especially in the U.S., as Novartis has deployed limited resources in recent years, as already previously mentioned. More than 70% of sales are generated by the LAR formulation, and the switch from the subcutaneous formulation shows an increase in adoption by Cushing disease patients, as well as a strong uptick in acromegaly patients. Opportunities in new geographies are also under evaluation. We will be able to sell directly to the market once the market authorizations are transferred from Novartis to Recordati Rare Diseases. This transition is expected to take place in Q1 in the U.S. and in early Q2 in Europe, with other key markets following in Q3 of this year. Next slide, please. So we're obviously very excited with the recent developments related to Isturisa, the new therapeutic option for Cushing's syndrome recently approved by the European Commission in January of this year, and for which orphan drug status was confirmed late last year. We have started market access activities and plan to launch in selected European markets during late Q2 and early Q3 2020. For the U.S. market, we have a PDUFA date on the 7th of March of this year, which could lead to a potential launch in 2020. In line with this, we are already gearing up our organization to support both the relaunch of Signifor as well as the potential 2020 launch of Isturisa in the USA. Regarding the Japanese market, we're planning to file in Q2 2020. Isturisa is a potent inhibitor of cortisol production, with the majority of patients achieving and maintaining normal cortisol levels at the end of the 8-week withdrawal period, as demonstrated by the LINK-3 study results. A strong clinical profile and acceptable side effects profile lead us to be optimistic that this could be a very successful product, with interest in potential sales level, which could be materially above the 100 million preliminary evaluation already communicated. In May, at the Capital Markets Day, when we will present our new 3-year business plan, we will provide a firmer estimate for the whole of our endocrinology franchise going forward. I now leave the floor to Luigi to take you through our 2019 results in more detail. Thank you. Grazie, Luigi.
Thank you, Andrea, and once again, good afternoon and good morning, everyone. I'm delighted to have this first opportunity to comment the Recordati 2019 results. I will start with revenue on slide 6. As Andrea said, total revenue grew by 9.6% in the year, with a strong contribution from our corporate products, including rare diseases, which overall now account for 68% of revenue. We are very pleased with the performance of the lercanidipine franchise in 2019, with combined sales of 193 million, which is ahead of plan set out in May last year. Zanidip sales grew by 11.3%, driven by growth in Germany, Italy, Turkey, and Poland. But we're also very pleased with the performance of Zanipress, our combination with enalapril, which we covered following generic entry and restarted growing in the second part of the year, ending 2019 broadly in line with last year. Urorex sales are also slightly ahead of plan, with sales growth of 6% due to the good performance of the product in all the main markets, and significant growth in Turkey and Russia. Livazo sales growth of 16% is also in line with plan, with good performance of the product in all of the main markets, in particular Spain, Russia, Greece, Switzerland, and Turkey. We've also stabilized the revenue of the metoprolol franchise acquired from AstraZeneca, with the franchise also providing a great platform to establish our organization in geographies where we didn't have resources on the ground, particularly Nordics, Benelux, and other markets. Other corporate products grew by 11.8%, driven by strong growth of fenticonazole, citrafleet, proctoglyvenol, and other OTC products, but also thanks to the contribution of Reagila, a new treatment for schizophrenia, with sales of just under 8 million euros for the year. Sales are slightly of Regida are slightly behind our initial expectations due to initial challenges and delays that we had with market access in various European markets. But we're now very encouraged with the trend that we see in markets where we've launched, and particularly pleased with the early trajectory of markets where we launched more recently, being Spain and Portugal. Drugs for rare diseases generated 249.9 million of sales, a growth of 16.3%, and include a contribution of 10 million of net revenue from Signifor and 10 million from Jaxapide. Signifor, of course, up until the point of marketing authorization transfer, we report under net revenue the net margin, which is transferred by Novartis. Switching to slide 7, which gives a picture of our portfolio, drugs for rare diseases have grown to 16.9% of total, up from 15.9% last year. OTC drugs have grown to 18.6%, up from 15.7% last year, thanks to the growth of Procto-Glyvenol, Casenlax, Magnesio Supremio, our new product, which was acquired from the acquisition of Natural Point in Italy, and of course from the integration of Tonipharm in France. Our reliance on the local product portfolio, as foreseen in plan, has decreased from 20% last year to now 17%, but remains an important part of the business. Moving to slide 8, and looking at revenue by geography, great obviously to see all of the major markets contributing to growth in the year. Sales in Italy are up 5.4%, reflecting the full year of the Natural Point business, but also thanks to the good performance of Cardicor and Rurorec and the launch of Regila. Sales in France are up 19.4%, thanks mainly to the addition of the product portfolio of Gincor and Alodon, products belonging to Tonipharm, the French company acquired in 2018. In Germany, sales are up by 1.3%, despite the competition from generic versions of Zanipress and Ortoton. Worth mentioning is the strong performance in market of Lercanidipine and Metoprolol, and also the good performance of the OTC portfolio. And again here, a good contribution from the launch of Reagila in the spring of 2018. Revenue generated in Russia, Ukraine, and other CIS countries is 120.2 million, up 13.8% versus last year, and includes an estimated positive FX gain of 3.4 million, mostly in the later part of the year. Sales in Russia in local currency are up 11%, with strong growth of corporate products, Livazo, Urorec, Zanipip, and Procto-Glyvenol. Sales in the U.S., which, as you know, is dedicated to products for treatment of rare diseases, are up 8.5% or 2.8% in local currency, with strong growth of Carbaglu and Cystadan, offsetting competition from generic entries, eroding Cosmogen, erosion which we are pleased to say has now stabilized in the later part of the year. Spain sales are 94.7 million, up 6.5%, mainly due to the performance of Citrafleet, Livazo, Birorec, Casenlax, and Urorec, and also of our OTC portfolio. Turkey had a very strong year with revenue growth in local currency of over 33%, driven by both exceptionally high price increases realized at the beginning of the year, but also of around 20%, and also strong underlying volume growth of the business, both of our corporate products and also our local product portfolio. The significant increase in sales in other European countries is mainly due to the growth of sales in Poland and Czech Republic, as well as the direct commercialization by Recordati organizations in the Nordics, Benelux, and Baltics, where sales were previously through licensees. Other international sales growth of 1% reflects the integration of the local portfolios in the local markets, I've just said, which offset strong growth of Lercani Dupin and Pitavastatin in international markets. North Africa, as was the case in prior quarters, slightly down due mainly to import challenges in Algeria, which offset underlying growth in our local Tunisian business. Moving on to slide 9, as you will see, our distribution of revenue remains well-balanced across different geographies, with Italy now accounting for less than 20% of total group revenue. Well, it's nice to see contribution of markets with stronger underlying growth, being Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and other Central and Eastern European markets, slightly growing in terms of total percentage of the group sales. As commented, international sales decreasing because of the localization of business where we used to in the past sell through distributors. Moving to slide 10 and to the P&L, I've commented already on revenue. Gross profit of 70.5%, slightly lower to gross profit margin last year, as commented in prior quarters, due to mainly to mix and currency effects. SG&A of 30.1% includes selling expenses at 25.2% of sales, up 11.8% due to the marketing expenses for the launch of Juxtapid Regila and the new commercial organization we've established in different markets already mentioned in Europe, as well as the reinforcement of a rare disease organization during the fourth quarter in order to grow sales of Signifor and prepare successful launch of Isturisa. G&A remains at around 5% of revenue. R&D expenses at 130 million are in line with the target of being between 8 and 9% and are up by 18.5% due to the advancement of new development programs and the amortization of amounts allocated to intangible assets following the acquisition of Natural Point, Tony Farm during 2018, and to 2 months worth of the amortization of the intangible paid to Novartis for the acquisition of Signifor. EBITDA at 36.7% is 544 million, an increase of 9%, with amortization charges of 53 million and depreciation charges of 24.9 million, which, as mentioned in past, also reflect the application of IFRS 16 as of the beginning of this year. Financial charges in the period of 21.1 million are an increase of 3.2 million, mainly due to the additional borrowing in the second half of the year to fund the transaction with Novartis. Net income, as Andrea explained, of 368.9 million reflects the exceptional benefit achieved through the finalization in late December of an agreement around patent box benefit for our Italian affiliate, which is in total 35 million, of which 27 million relating to previous years, period 2015 to 2018, and 8.3 million related to 2019. Moving to slide 11. As we said, treatment for rare diseases now account for close to 17% of revenue and now account for over 22% of EBITDA and 23.5% of EBIT, a share which is we expect to further grow in line with our plan ambitions in 2020, thanks to the addition of the new businesses. Some reduction in margin for rare diseases over the course of 2018 due to investments that we've made to support these new launches and for the increase in amortization arising from the recent acquisitions. Margins on specialty and primary care remain broadly in line with last year. Turning over to slide 12, in terms of and looking at our net financial position, net debt of 902.7 million is an increase of 314.3 million versus 2018. But reflects 190 million paid in dividends during the year and 425 million paid for acquisitions and milestones. namely 36.4 million, which were paid for the license agreement with Aegerion Pharmaceuticals for the exclusive rights to Juxtapid in Japan, milestones of around 47.5 million paid to Helsinn for the license agreement for Ledaga, and 350 million paid to Novartis for the acquisition of Signifor and Isturisa. Net financial position also reflects, as previously commented, the impact of application of IFRS 16, which adds 27.7 million to our net debt. Group's underlying cash generation, excluding dividends and transactions, remains strong and around 100% of net income. On a pro forma basis, adjusting for a full year EBITDA of the acquired Signifor business, net debt to EBITDA will be around 1.5 to 1.6 times, which is in line with the targets we set for our plan. So once again, a strong year of financial performance, and now I hand over to Andrea, who will discuss the outlook for 2020.
Okay, thank you very much, Luigi. So moving on to the guidance for 2020, the first slide, slide 13, basically recaps all the financial or key assumptions behind the guidance. So, as already indicated in our business plan, which was announced last May, we will be facing generic competition starting this year for two of our products, Urorec and Livazom. However, the continued underlying volume growth of the rest of our specialty and primary care portfolio is expected to offset the impact of the entry of generics for these two products. We also expect double-digit growth for our rare disease business thanks to the good performance of Ledaga, Juxtapid, and Sister Drops, offsetting the expected erosion of Panhematin in the U.S. due to the launch of Givosiran. And also, clearly, we're expecting this double-digit growth due to the incremental revenue from Signifor, from the Signifor franchise, and the initial launch of Isturisa in Europe. No U.S. Sales for Isturisa are included in our guidance at the moment. As already mentioned, our targets include additional investments also to support the relaunch of Signifor and launch of Isturisa. R&D costs increased to between 9 and 10%, mainly due to the amortization charges related to recent asset acquisitions and the ongoing endocrinology products clinical trials. There is a slight improvement in EBITDA margin due to a product country mix and stable operating income margin, which shows the sustainability of our margins also in 2020, with a slight improvement, actually. Income tax rate is expected to decrease to between 23 and 24% thanks to the patent box tax benefit in Italy. And in our numbers and guidance, as always, we have not included any acquisitions or business development initiatives for 2020 targets. However, we do have a rich pipeline of opportunities under evaluation currently. Our 2021 plan financials announced at a Capital Markets Day in May last year for 2021 is confirmed. Moving on to the last slide of the presentation with the actual guidance targets. As you can see, the 2020 targets show, based on the preceding assumptions that I just showed in the slide before, we expect revenues between 1,550 million and 1,580 million euros, an EBITDA between 580 and 590 million, an EBIT between 490 and 500 million, and a net income between 360 and 370 million. Again, we have not included initial sales, and we have not included full promotional costs for Isturisa launch in the U.S. We have obviously included some pre-marketing activities and preparations for the launch, but not the fully-fledged promotional costs that you would expect in a launch plan. And as mentioned before, and I'd like to stress this one last time, these targets do not include any business development initiatives of any sort, being asset deals, acquisition of companies, and so forth. So this takes me to the end of the presentation, and I think that at this point we can open for the Q&A session around our presentation.
Operator, thank you. Please open the Q&A session.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call Conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Niccolò Storer with Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you and good afternoon, everyone. First question is on 2020 guidance. If we can go a little bit more in depth, because if I strip out the impact of Signifor, I would basically be left with very very moderate growth. So, which assumptions you used on your main products, and in particular on Urorec and Livazo, which are expected to go off patent? The second one is on cash generation. Basically, if I start from your net income plus D&A, I end up with 450 million roughly, minus dividend, minus the 425 of M&A and related activities, minus IFRS 16 impact. At the end of the day, I'm still some 100 million short of your 900 million report. So if you can elaborate on that, thank you.
So in terms of, so this is Luigi, thank you for the questions. I'll take them to start with. In terms of assumptions on products, I'll point back to the slide I show about on the growth drivers for this year, which basically remain valid for 2020, with the exception, obviously, of Urorec and Livazo. On Urorec, we have seen generics enter the market as expected, and we expect a generic impact of around 40 million for the net revenue for the year. And on Livazo, we're still expecting generics as of August of this year, with an impact of around 7 million. So that's to address your question with regards to generic impacts. In terms of cash generation, I'm not sure on the maps you've done. Let me just point out that on net income, obviously the 35 million of tax benefit, which we have highlighted, is a non-cash item for 2019. We will see the benefit in terms of cash flow mostly in 2020 and then 2021.
Let me just add something. So, obviously, we're expecting the numbers that Luigi mentioned on potential impact on sales of the generics of Urorec and Cilodazin. However, like I mentioned before, we do expect continued underlying growth also in the SPC. This is mainly driven by a moderate growth on some of our key corporate products, let them be Lercanidipin, Metoprolol, and the Casen portfolio. We are expecting to double the sales of Cariprazine in 2020, and we're also seeing strong growth coming from our OTC portfolio, especially in Central Eastern Europe. Some key local portfolio products, and some of our subsidiaries, you know that we have some key local products, are also performing and growing on last year. And obviously, also, let's not forget that we have Central Eastern Europe, Russia, CIS, and Turkey, which are still showing strong underlying growth. Finally, clearly, like I mentioned in the presentation of the assumptions, that we're seeing and expecting double-digit growth on our rare disease portfolio. I hope that kind of gives you an idea of what the growth drivers of going forward in 2020 are expected to be.
Thank you.
The next question is from Casey Arikatla with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my questions. I have two, please. The first one, you mentioned that your guidance includes expected Panhematin erosion in the U.S. given competition from Givosiran. Can you give us a sense of how big the product is in the U.S. for you? And also, how are you thinking about erosion in 2020? And how should we think about it going forward? Is it only going to be a 2020 event, or do you expect it to last for several years? And the second one looks like on Oslodrostat, you're advancing your timeline guidance in the U.S. from 2022 to 2020. How do you think this will impact Signifor franchise, please, if any, if there is any impact at all? Thank you.
Okay, so thank you, Casey. Luigi again here. I'll start with the first question. In terms of Givosiran impact, I think it's we see it, obviously, will take time for the product to have impact. So to your specific question, is it more a 2020 event or beyond? We see it as, you know, being more beyond the 2020. We do think panhematin will remain an important treatment option for patients. Not all acute intermittent porphyria patients will have a number of attacks that will justify divosurin use, and even where it will be used, patients will still require hemin during acute phases. We're not going to give specific numbers on panhematin sales for the U.S., but let's say we have built in a level of erosion this year, but we expect majority of erosion to happen in 2021 onwards. Your second question, I think, is around revised guidance for Isturisa. And just to be clear, what we've said today is that we are cautiously optimistic around the potential launch of Isturisa in 2020. Of course, we are waiting now for final feedback from the FDA with a PDUFA date in March, on March 7th of this year. We do see continued opportunity to grow Signifor, particularly in acromegaly, to position Isturisa as a key treatment options for patients for Cushing's disease. I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thank you.
The next question is from Martino De Ambroggi with Equita. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon, everybody. The first question is on 2021 guidance, because you include some acquisitions undisclosed, while 2020 already includes the acquisition announced. My question is, are you able to achieve the 2021 targets under the current perimeter, or we should expect additional acquisitions in order to achieve the 2021? And eventually, what is missing in terms of, sales roughly or EBIT?
So Martino, in the call, Andrea has confirmed the strategy to continue to develop the company also through inorganic development, and we would like to continue to acquire new assets going forward. As usual, in the target for the current year, we don't include M&A because it's short term, and we have also stated this in the slide 14, that the target of 2020 excludes any new acquisition, even we are continue to pursue this kind of deal, while for clarity, we have also confirmed that in our plan, we expect to continue to do acquisition, and then we expect to achieve not only through the current portfolio and the acquisition of Novartis deal, but also through other deal, the target in 2021. Then the answer is in the objective in 2021, we have still included new deals that we expect to close going forward.
Okay, thank you. I was asking you this question because looking at Bloomberg consensus is already close to the target without announcing any other acquisition.
Okay, I cannot comment on the Bloomberg consensus. But for sure, the Bloomberg consensus in some analysts include M&A, some other they don't include M&A. Then for sure, the statement of the company is this one: target 2020 are without new deals. Target 2021 in line with our plan include other deals that we expect to close going forward. Maintaining our objective is to have essentially a level of debt which is in the region, as we have stated, in 1.5 our EBITDA.
Okay, very clear, Fritz. The second question is on the two new products you bought from Novartis, because Andrea, in your initial remarks, you mentioned for both the potential is in excess of the 100 million euro that you guided at the beginning. And for one of the two, if I remember correctly, you even underlined significantly higher than 100.
Material.
Yeah.
Material. Material was the word.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you take, let's say, the two already commercialized products, Signet for Liam and LAR, this product closed, like we saw the presentation, around 74 million in 2019. Okay, and I obviously stated that our expectation is to continue to drive growth due to the lack of promotion that Novartis has put behind these products in recent years. So we still see some upside, and we expect these products to have in excess of 100 million of peak sales. These are the two already marketed products. For Signifor, for Isturisa, we had already stated during when we announced the acquisition that we were expecting product sales around 100 million of peak sales. But now we have, we feel convinced, even though, as I said, we will communicate a firmer kind of outlook on this franchise, which includes all products in the endocrinology franchise, but we expect this product to be materially above this 100 million peak sales going forward.
If I may just follow up on this, you are guiding for 70 million additional sales for the two, Isturisa and Signifor LAR. How much of this is for Isturisa this year in 2020?
We don't tend to disclose this sort of detail, as you know very well, on the product. It's a small part. Let's consider that in 2020, as I mentioned before, we did not put any numbers for the U.S. because we still haven't had the approval in the U.S. Even though we are cautiously optimistic, we will have the approval in March. But until we get it, we cannot build this into the numbers. And in Europe, due obviously to the whole pricing reimbursement kind of pathways that we need to follow for market access, having just got the approval of the product in January, we expect to start launching late Q2 and onwards in a selected number of countries, which allow, let's say, which have market access pathways which are faster than in a majority of European countries. So we don't expect to have significant sales for Isturisa in 2020.
And just to be clear, just to add on what Andrea said and make sure the point was clear, 2020 revenue for Signifor does include will include up to the point of marketing authorization transfer a sort of net profit transfer from Novartis in revenue. So it's not a sort of full sales number.
Okay, thank you very much.
As expecting, we're planning to receive marketing authorization in the U.S. In the first quarter one of this year, and so we're going to start booking sales from that moment, and full sales, and for Europe, it's going to be in Q2, sometime in Q2, more towards the second half of the Q2. Okay?
Okay, thank you. If I may, just a quick question on the net working capital in order to finalize the bridge for the net debt in 2019.
Sorry, your question in general, sort of net working capital.
Yeah,
so
the,
first
the
of
contribution
all,
of the net working capital in 2019 for the net debt bridge.
Yeah, we'll come back in more details on that when we sort of publish the sort of full results. But just to be clear, one, in the bridge, I'm not sure, again, I didn't take notes when you were reading it out. I don't know if you missed the 28 million adjustment, which is done this year for transition to IFRS 16. Number one. Number two, we've seen an increase in, we did have a sort of increase in inventory towards the back end of the year as we prepared the business, particularly for serialization in Russia, where we sort of built, had to sort of build stock. But again, in terms of full balance sheet details, you have to accept we'll come back once the full results are available.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Jo Walton with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a few questions, please. And just a clarification to start with, you've told us that you booked about 10 million of Signifor La in the quarter. This was the net profit, so the end user sales would have been, you know, a bit higher than that. So when we're thinking about the underlying sales in the quarter, if we were to look at it there, they would be, I don't know, say 20% higher. I'm just, my questions relate to whether you are still happy with the guidance that you've given historically for some of the other drugs, Juxtapid, for example. Do you think that that'll still get to the 20 to 30 million in Japan you originally thought? Ladaga, are you still happy with 50 million peak sales? If we look at the patent expiries that you're expecting for Urorec and Livaso, can you give us, are they going to be Europe-wide, are these products where it will be, when it goes in a country, it will go completely? Do you think that there will be some residual sales? What we're trying to look at is not just the impact this year, but effectively what a sort of tail value of sales could be for these products. And I've got two final questions, if I could, please. If we look at your guidance level for this year, and I just take the midpoint of your revenues and the midpoint of your EBITDA, I see an EBITDA margin of 37.4%, which is higher than you achieved in 2019. I'm just wondering how realistic that is when you are losing a couple of products which presumably have been, you know, reached a high level of profitability, and at the same time you are investing heavily in a new launch. Is it the mix shift materially to more towards more specialty, or how can we be confident that you can have that margin uplift in what should be an investment year? Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you. I think I've caught them all, but if not, I'll ask Marianne to help. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. So maybe I'll start with your question around, can we reconfirm our peak year sales ambitions for Ledaga and Juxtapid? And the short answer is yes, we do. So in terms of guidance on the EBITDA margin, yes, you're right. And I think we said we do expect a slight improvement in our EBITDA margin for this year. Yes, of course, we'll face the erosion from the generic entries, but as you said, the mix of our portfolio is improving. We'll have a greater share of the business from higher margin rare diseases business. We have a higher contribution from regions with slightly higher than average margins. And again, as we've said, and just to be clear, whilst we have built in the numbers, some costs for pre-marketing and to prepare the relaunch of Signifor, we have not reflected either revenue nor the full cost of launching Isturisa in the U.S. So hopefully that addresses your question. And yes, we do aim for a slight improvement in EBITDA margin for this year, with EBIT margin remaining broadly stable. I think I may have missed your first question, which was
regarding the 10 million.
Yes, you do have to gross up the 10 million realized in quarter four, as this is the sort of net gross profit transfer from Novartis. We'll get back to you on what that exact sort of gross up should be. I think it should be a bit more than the 20%.
If I could just also ask, then, in terms of the SG&A, presumably the fourth quarter SG&A, which was a little bit higher than we've seen in the prior three quarters, that is still not a good guide for the SG&A that we should be expecting in 2020, because it doesn't include any effort effectively on your part to reinvigorate the Signifor franchise.
It does include already an effort, because it goes without saying that we started gearing up the organization already after the summer last year, because it goes without saying that we did not wait for the approvals to arrive. We had to start preparing ourselves for more marketing authorization transfer. So the reference I made to that organization that we put in place in Basel, which is a fully fledged global BU headquarter with a substantial headcount, obviously has an impact on that. And we also started recruiting already people on the field in Europe and in the US. Because again, we could not wait, because obviously we are cautiously optimistic on Isturisa, but we also have a signal that we need to take back in control and start growing. So there was already quite an impact in Q4 on our Q4 numbers on SG&A regarding investments in the endocrinology franchise.
So the SG&A in 4Q is a reasonable guide to how we should think going forwards, because you've incorporated the majority of, let's say, the fixed, if not the variable costs, into your numbers already.
You have to remember that the recruitment takes time. I'll say yes, but obviously, you know, it's a scale-up. So obviously, it takes a bit of time. But yes, I'd say generally, yes.
Yeah, broadly speaking, the answer is yes.
Thank you. And on Isturisa in the US, you have presumably... you say you're now more cautiously optimistic. Is the outstanding question still whether the FDA needs that confirmatory link 4 study, or will be happy with the same amount of data that the Europeans had?
We are cautiously optimistic the link 3 study data, that was the question, is going to be enough.
Thank you very much.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question is from Isacco Brambilla with Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. I have a couple. The first one is on the performance of the Lercanidipine franchise. It was stronger than expectations, especially in the second half of 2019. I was wondering some indication on how to model the evolution of sales of this franchise for 2020, whether you are expecting some growth from this portfolio. And the second one is on the evolution of EBIT margin. So implied in your guidance, we have roughly 31.5% in 2020, and you reiterated your target of 33% for 2021. So could you give us more color on the drivers of this material margin expansion in 2021, whether it is organic or driven by margin accretive M&A?
Yeah, so in terms of byproduct guidance for 2020, we'll provide more detail in May. But having said that, I don't think we do see continued growth in Lercanidipine, if not at the sort of 2019 levels, not too far from that. In terms of the EBIT margin of 31.5%, in relation to the target of 33%, again, we have today sort of confirmed that what the plan for 2021 was, as presented in May. We will be sort of updating the plan in May of this year. We are, as a result of the type of acquisitions that we have made, we are incurring high amortization charges, and therefore we are putting a focus on the EBITDA margin delivery, where EBIT will be somewhat penalized because of the degree of amortization coming from the asset deals which we've done in 2019.
Okay.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Okay, then.
Thank you very much, everybody, for connecting, and have a good Valentine's Day and a good weekend.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye, everybody.